Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Eleanor Spicer Rice, PhD. She's an entomologist and writer, and we're talking about her new book, which is amazingly fun to read. Your Pet's Secret Lives, The Truth Behind Your Pet's Wildest Behaviors. Eleanor, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here, Mark.
Now, talk to me about Rob Wilson, who's the illustrator for this, because as entertaining as your writing is, and it is entertaining, his illustrations are hilarious, too.
Oh, his illustrations make me laugh out loud. This is his first book for children. What he usually does is fashion illustrations and like high-end fashion brands. But we roped him into coming to do this because the way he observes life is so wonderful to me and his drawings. And he agreed. So this is his first book that he's done all on his own. And I think his drawings are so funny. Something else that's great about Rob is that he's not really a scientist. So he reads these fever dreams of a chapter and then he just comes out with what he thinks that they're talking about. So he comes up with ideas that I would never in a million years think about, like hamsters punching each other in the face with boxing gloves and, you know, big old snakes just making their way on out of the tank. It wouldn't cross my mind, but they're so much better than anything I could have ever imagined.
Now, all that aside, I do want to say for the benefit of the audience, this is a book with tremendous, hard, serious information in it. And in several of the chapters, you actually interview scientists who are working in certain fields.
That's right. We interview scientists and we selected the scientists that were at the top of their field that are from traditionally underrepresented groups in science. So, because we want everybody to see that someone in one of these books that looks like them and comes from a background like they come from. So the stories that the scientists tell themselves are amazing to me. They are also things I learned. And to write each chapter, we went to the peer-reviewed literature, the hardcore basic science, and we searched through, and you can look in the back and see where these studies are. And we researched as much as we could to find things that amazed us. And then that's what I turned into the stories that made up the book.
What I was impressed by is also, I kept thinking as a snake owner, that she's never going to cover snakes in this book. You do. You cover a wide range of pets that people have. Was there anything you left out that you didn't want to really live out? Like genres of pets, like dogs, cats, fish.
Well, the way we picked the pets was we looked to see what the 20 most kept pets were. But once I got into it, I was surprised at the different types of pets that people are keeping at their homes. And there were some that I didn't cover that I wanted to, like leopard geckos aren't in there. A lot of people have leopard geckos, and I would like to learn more about leopard geckos because they're supposed to be just these little gentle things that people keep in their house.
They're fun. And they're funny.
They are funny. They love to watch them hunt. They look like they think they're so ferocious, but they don't have any, you know. So I would love to know more about things like that, like the a little bit sideways pets. My own pets I didn't cover. I have a bunch of pigeons. I didn't put them in there.
Well, you do cover several species of birds, though.
There are a lot of birds in there. Yep, there's pets for most people who keep pets. There's something about something similar to the pets. Although I know that you have a couple of reptiles that did not make the cut.
But there was still useful information. That's what I want to say. Yeah, you can't do every single thing people are keeping as a pets because people are going crazy now. This brings another weird question. Do you find that people who have never had pets weird?
I wonder about them.
You do? I mean, in all seriousness.
Do you think it's strange when people don't keep pets?
They've never bonded with a dog or a cat or a mouse or a fish or something.
Yeah.
I think that's odd.
It's strange.
Yeah.
It is. It's odd to me, too, because I feel like most of us, even if we didn't have a pet, we were like, as children, forcing creatures to be our pets. You know, everybody's gotten a roly-poly at least once.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, I'm your best friend.
And for those of you who don't know, she's talking about sow bugs, which are an invertebrate.
Oh, yeah, sow bugs, which are not insects. They're crustaceans, the more closely related to shrimp.
I used to play croquet with them, like on
a
tiny little miniature croquet field that we
like
would.
Like in Alice in Wonderland.
Exactly. And we take a tiny little twig and then bend the end of it. So, and then when they're rolled up, we would sort of gently, and they were never hurt. They all ran away.
Oh, no. They were like, I'm finally as fast as I am in my dreams. This is working out exactly right. Yeah, I think all of us, most of us have made something. We have a desire to have pets,
I think.
And I'm sure I will meet somebody that proves me wrong, but every person I've met so far has at least named something. They might have named their plant, but everybody wants to keep something like a pet. Isn't that strange about humans?
Well, I think it bears investigating. I think there's research that needs to be done on that. You write in your book that we consider these pets family members, and that's no exaggeration. That's really true.
That's true. And, you know, for a lot of these pets, for our dogs and cats at least, we've been keeping them for tens of thousands of years.
Yeah,
so we've evolved together, like on a chemical level. We've evolved with our creatures. So they've evolved to be a part of our lives in the same way that our families do. They understand our feelings, or they can detect our feelings. I don't know what understanding means from their own perception, but they can detect our feelings. They can detect they can comprehend our words and our motions, and we understand them in ways that we might not realize that we're understanding them.
Now, I can't do this book justice in a half hour, but I want to talk about a few things that are mentioned in your book that just really struck me as wild. One of them, and I'm a cat person, not a dog person, but I was fascinated by the stuff that is in your book about dogs. I actually talked to a dog owners after I read this. The dog's guilty look, when the dog has done something really, really bad, like ripped apart your sofa cushion or ripped apart the garbage, you walk in, you're upset, the dog gives you this look, and to a person, everybody I have talked to is, no, they're guilty. They know they're guilty. And they have that look that they give you. But in your book, you talk this I think it's Julie Hecht.
Julie Hecht, that's right.
Who spies on dogs. I love that.
She does. She's the dog spies lady. Yes.
And she says they're not guilty at all.
No, they don't care at all. They're just trying to figure out what we want. And I feel, you know what, though? It works for them because we see that and we're like, oh, you do feel bad about that. You should feel bad about it. But the truth is, they don't care. They're just trying to cast about seeing what works for them.
So in other words, they're playing us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, man. They're playing us. But you know what? We're buying into it.
Oh, my God. When I talked to dog owners about this, like I said, to a person, they immediately got, no, he really knew, or she really knew.
Oh, yeah.
I felt so bad that she was so guilty. And I'm going like, whoa.
But it works. It works. You know, the other thing about the dog that was wild to me was they're going to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Did you know that about how they align their bodies with the north-south axis?
I found that. I've got to watch. This is going to be weird. I've got to start watching dogs crap. Because have you watched them and it's true?
It has now marked my hobby and my passion to watch my dogs go to the bathroom. Because they do it almost every time. If it's an emergency and they're in a hurry or somebody bothers them while they're going, they will go in not the right. Oh, we should probably say what it is.
But okay, go ahead.
What it is that dogs can detect the Earth's electromagnetic field. And for whatever reason, when they go to the bathroom, one of the ways that they know, we humans know that they can detect the field, is they line their bodies up with the north-south axis of Earth's electromagnetic field to relieve themselves, because it feels more comfortable to them to do it that way. And lots of animals do this, and lots of animals detect it. Humans, we don't think, can detect the field. So since I didn't believe the studies when I read the studies, and then I started watching my dogs, and almost every single time, unless there's something going on, they line their bodies up with the north-south axis.
Oh, my God.
It's wild.
Well, but it's about to get wilder
because
they're finding that our North Pole is moving.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. So seriously, watch your dogs closely.
Going?
Well, this is a story for another time, but periodically this happens on Earth, and nobody's quite sure. Poles have actually reversed on the planet, too, while there's been life on it.
Good grading.
So it'll be interesting to see how dogs poo after they'll start.
That will be our canary in the coal mine.
Oh, my God.
They start twisting their body.
Well, while we're on dogs, you start out with a great subject that a lot of people think about, tail wagging in dogs. And there's actually like it's like a physical clue to how they're feeling.
That's true. And we know humans just instinctively can tell a lot of them. Like, we can tell if their tail's up, they're nervous. I mean, they're excited and somebody has their attention. Or if their tail is tucked under, we know they're scared or they're running away. But then it goes deeper. And if they wag their tail to the left, that means they're nervous and unsure. And if they wag their tail to the right, it means they're happy and they're ready to make friends. But what's wilder about it is if a dog is watching a dog wag its tail to the left, the watcher starts to act nervous and unsure. Their heart rate increases. They start panting and kind of walking around because the left tail wagger is telling that dog that something is up and that we need to know about it. So not every wag is equal, I guess.
Well, you know what? The first thing I thought of when I read that section of the book is, just as humans have handedness, either left or right-handed, are there dogs that have tail-endedness?
They've got some southpaws, you mean, going on?
No, you know, people have a preferred, like, left or right.
You know, that would be interesting. Because it's connected to their brain hemispheres.
Right.
I don't, you know, who knows?
Well, also, there's like, more that's more research for Julie to do.
As if they're handed this. And that's something that this book has really surprised me and made me really excited about, is how little we know about these animals that we live with. I think because I have a relationship, I know everything about them, and I didn't even want to write the book.
Oh,
because
come
I was
on.
Like, what else is there to say? But then when we started looking into it, a lot of this stuff we're just finding out.
That's right.
It's amazing how little we know.
And you talk about it at the end of the book about that pet owners can be citizen scientists by keeping just like Julie Hecht is keeping a close watch on dogs and keeping a journal and noting their behavior. You can do that yourself.
Yeah, you can do that yourself. And there are a lot of great places online that you can go, like Zooniverse, that you can find a study on there. There are all kinds of studies. You can select those studies, and then you can take data off your pets and mail it in to be a part of a real citizen science project. Yeah.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Eleanor Spicer Rice, PhD. She's an entomologist and writer, and we're talking about her new book. It's just chock full of interesting stuff. Your Pet's Secret Lives, The Truth Behind Your Pet's Wildest Behaviors. Now, I want to go to cats, where my heart lies. I've always found, we were talking about how dogs have a guilty look because they care about how you feel and they're sort of playing you. The great thing about cats is they don't care about you at all. It's like,
yeah.
I'm living with the cats like a roommate, and occasionally our lives interact, but the cats are definitely ruling the house.
I've always felt like a cat is a great thing to have if you need to keep your self-esteem in check. Like, they will make you feel good, but at the same time, they're not going to let you feel too good about yourself in terms of everything.
Well, there's so fascinating information about cats in the book, too. You appeal to Dr. Miquel Maria Delgado, who's a behavior consultant. And she talks about, you know, for some kinds of pets like dogs and lots of zoo animals, they put food in food puzzles. In other words, the animals have to figure out the stuff to get the food, but then that doesn't work with cats.
Yeah. They don't care. They're just like, give it to me.
They really don't want to work for food. Like an octopus will do loves food puzzles and all sorts of other things. But cats, no.
No, they want to go straight for it. And can you blame them? I feel like a cat. Like, why would I work for it if I don't have to? You know, dogs.
And they'll break you down. They'll just ignore you. And eventually you're going to give them the food.
Yeah, they know. They know. And the thing about cats that was so interesting to me was that they understand us in ways similar to how dogs understand us. and they look to us because we've evolved with them too. They understand our emotions. They can tell if we're sad.
But they just don't care.
they don't care. But the thing is, like, if you're sad, you can tell me, Mark, because you have cats at home now. I haven't had a cat in a few years. But when you're sad, they bump you. If you're sitting down and you look blue and you have an instinct to reach out and touch them. Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, they do.
And that,
they do.
Yeah.
But they'll do the minimum.
Oh, yeah. They're like, I did it.
The thing that appeals to me about cats is they're fiercely individual and independent. I mean, it is like living with roommates, and they have very different personalities. I have two cats that have incredibly different personalities. But one of the things I learned in your book, and this is I'm watching for this now, about do cats understand this? And you were just talking about that. There's a thing called the slow blink.
Oh yeah. Do your cats do that?
I'm trying to see if, and I love my cats. I mean, I treat them like the little princes and princesses that they are, but I've yet to see the slow blink. But
they haven't done the slow blink for you?
Oh God, I'm lucky they're not biting me.
Do you rub them on their little cheeks?
Of course
they
do.
Come up and tell you.
But I have to.
And they're not. Yeah, but they make you. They've trained you. Well, here's the thing about the slow blink. When they're slow blinking to you, or when they bump you because you're sad, one of the things they've learned is that you get happy because they're paying attention to you, and you release oxytocin.
You're right.
And that's the same thing that, you know, mothers are releasing when they have new babies falling in love, and the cat releases the same chemical in their bodies. And y'all have this feedback loop where you just kind of get blissed out together for now until they remind you that they could leave at any minute. But
that's as they get older. As kittens, they're very, you know, they're very cuddly and stuff like that. After a couple of years, mm-hmm. they're like, they have figured out how you work, and they know it, and they're going to play that. Another great thing I learned in your book is how catnip works. And that's something I always wanted to know. And it's nepetalactone.
Yeah, nepetalactone. That's right. It's a chemical that's in the leaves that comes out when they bruise the leaves. And as soon as a cat smells that, they have this overwhelming urge to just roll around in it. They can't control it. They have to chew it. They have to roll around in it. And it just bangs around in their neurons and makes them feel stoned. And for 15 minutes. They just get stoned and stoned and stoned.
And then it just is over. And then it's over.
Yeah, they're overwhelmed. And then they can wait. And it's not just cats. A third of cats can't feel it, though. A third of cats just don't care about this at all. But all, because it's hereditary, but all kinds of animals, tigers, leopards, cougars, they all have this uncontrollable urge as soon as they smell catnip to roll around and go crazy on it. And the thing about it is that we're not sure why. Or what it does to them. Like, we know what it does to them, but we don't know why this interaction has happened. But we do know that if the cats that are covered in catnip are repellent to mosquitoes, and mosquitoes transmit a lot of diseases, so they do get benefits from rolling around in this plant.
The interesting thing is dogs don't have a reaction like that catnip at all. Is there anything?
As far as they know, no other creatures. But
so it's only the feline family.
Yeah, but it's all the felines.
And there are a few cats that don't react at all.
That's right. A third of them just do not care about it at all. But the other two thirds, just watch out. Do your cats react to it? Have you ever given them catnip?
Hmm. Okay, we're going to run out of time before we get to ask all the questions I want to ask.
Oh,
I want to talk about goldfish. Now, there's a lot of fish information here that's really, really interesting, but I want to sort of drill down just on goldfish. Goldfish is a carp, and you write that as far as fish go, goldfish are intelligent. They're super intelligent.
They're super intelligent. All of that stuff about having a memory of a goldfish is not real. That's just our perception. They can remember stuff for years. They remember who you are.
That freaked me out.
Navigate mazes.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. And they're watching. They're watching all the time. They've got nothing else to do. A team of scientists in Israel trained them to drive a little fish car, which is just this little fish tank on wheels, down the road to get food and go back home. And they did it. and they can remember it. And all of these things combined, their massive intelligence and their ability to learn combined to make them pretty destructive once you let them go into the wild. So, and we do let them go into the wild.
Oh, my God.
They can live up to 20 years.
And they become incredible pests in the ecology of ponds and the rivers that they're let go in because they eat everything.
Yeah.
They eat everything.
They eat everything. And they're so smart that when they see people coming to rid the pond of pest fish, one way they do it is they shock the water and all the fish float up to the top. When the goldfish see somebody coming to shock the water so the fish can come up to the top and they can harvest the goldfish, the carp out of there, they just swim down to the bottom to get out of the way.
Wow.
Does no good. And they go to these massive spawning events where they navigate our river system, and they can lay something like 40,000 eggs a year.
Wow.
And then they navigate back home, and they can do it every year for like 20 years, each fish.
And they also get huge in the wild. They get really big in the wild.
They get huge.
Well, because
they're
a carp, and carps are huge.
They're a carp.
Right.
Yeah, as soon as they, and within a couple of generations, they don't look like goldfish anymore at all. They revert back to the wild type.
Right.
So they just look like these boring old, you know, fish. I mean, they're probably not boring for fish people. Some people, you know.
Well, carp, you're digging a hole for yourself for the fish people. Don't go there.
Sorry, they're beautiful. Every animal's beautiful.
and that's another point about your book is you have a lot of interesting medical information, and you also have environmental information. We talked about don't dump your goldfish. And
right.
In Florida, people have let go enormous numbers of reptiles. And in case of the Burmese pythons, they're ruining the Everglades.
They've swallowed up to 99% of the Everglades' small mammals. And we're doing it out of having a heart. We don't want to kill our pets, but we also, and we don't want to mistreat them in our homes. So we think, go be free, you know, but not every pet needs to be free. You just think about how, put them up for adoption. Think about ways that you cannot put your pet outside because, those Burmese pythons are there because we've just let them go. They eat even like bobcats.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
And alligators. I mean, they'll take alligators.
Alligators. They eat alligators.
Well, they have now a bounty on large ones, and people actually try to go out and hunt them. But, you know, even though they're huge, finding a python in the Everglades is like looking for a needle in a haystack.
It's almost impossible. And so what they're doing now is they're taking male snakes and they're sticking little trackers on them and letting them go to find females because when they mate, they have these massive writhing mating balls. And so they'll put a tracker on a male and they'll follow them to the females and then they kill everybody but the sentinel snake is what they call it. They'll kill everybody but him once they find them.
Sentinels of doom, as you say in your book.
Sentinels of doom.
The other weird thing, and I'm so glad you brought this up, is that some snakes are parthenogenic. And what is that?
That means that they can have babies. They're pulling a Jurassic Park on us. They can have babies even if they have not mated. They still are able to make viable offspring. And we didn't believe that was true. I interviewed Warren Booth, who's a wonderful scientist here in, he lives in Virginia, but he noticed it with his pet snakes at home and started going around to people trying to find out if this was going on in other places. And it turns out it happens a lot in the reptile world. And this all just came out in the last couple of years because a man who loved his snakes was curious about what was happening with them.
I think they first discovered it a couple of decades ago in a lizard that lives in the Pacific, I mean, in the Southwest. But they thought that was
lizard.
The only case until very recently,
that's
and they found out that snakes can do it too. Now, these snakes that
and
are born.
Alligators and crocodiles.
But these,
all kinds of reptiles can do it.
These reptiles that are parthenogenically reproducing, it's all genetically identical to them, though, right? There's no other genetic input.
Right.
Wow.
Right. They're just putting their own genes in there. Which is frightening, but it's also comforting because that means if there's a mutation or something, they'll just weed themselves out of the population.
Now,
but it's still amazing.
Now, if you're listening, all of this information is in this book, which is...
For children.
I know. And I think it's really for adults and children. I think children definitely love it. It's a wonderful book, but it's also a great book for adults. Is there any chance there'll be a volume two?
They're not about pets. There will be a third book in the series that I just wrapped up. And let me tell you, Mark, I'm so excited about it. It's all about things that are conversations that are being had around us that we can't detect.
Oh.
So things that happen just outside of our human detection.
Is this like the mice singing?
It's like the mice singing, yes, which are really loud.
Okay, but we have to, that's a temp piece for people who are listening to go and buy the book. My guest tonight has been Eleanor Spicer Rice, PhD. She's an entomologist and writer, and we've been talking about her new book. I you know, it's one of those books you just have a ball reading it. Your Pet's Secret Lives, and then it'll make you start watching your dog pooping, which is... Kadoos to you for doing that, Eleanor. The truth behind your pet's wildest behaviors. Eleanor, thank you so much for your time.
Mark, you're so much fun. Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.